The Overcoming of the Superman by Julius Evola. The facility with which ideas lacking any real consistency sometimes acquire an evocative force, to the point of becoming a sort of alibi for the passions, is amazing. Those who have held them to be true experience them as such so vividly that they end up believing they have found confirmation of them in their own deepest experiences. This can be said, for example, of evolutionism and Darwinism. The theory of the descent of man from the beast and of the selection of the species through the affirmation of the strongest over the various conditions of the environment through adaptation and hereditary transmission of acquired characteristics. This materialistic and anti-aristocratic myth of the scientism of yesterday, there isn't anyone now who sees it as anything more than a wavering hypothesis which has had its day and which, as time goes by, is progressively stripped of its presumed positive basis. Nevertheless, this theory, until yesterday, appeared to a whole generation almost as a revelation, not as an hypothesis among many others, to be considered and tested within the strictly scientific field, but rather as a new and certain vision of the world, an illuminating discovery, and a new consciousness acquired once and for all by mankind. And here we find art such as that of Jack London, a typical example of the passionate alibi which we referred to. Jack London often makes us really live the theory of evolution and natural selection, serving as the basis for his general conception of life, in a whole series of personages, vicissitudes, descriptions, and episodes. It seems true, indeed obvious to us. The evocative force of art makes it seem as if a world really existed in which biological heredity, the instinct of conservation, and the struggle for existence were indeed the fundamental driving forces, and the supreme human type appears more or less as that of the magnificent beast, the animal which, in the fullness of all its energies and of all its vital instincts, has prevailed over everything, has resisted everything. Moreover, as some of a series of heredities transmitted to us through the dark ways of blood from the primordial times of the savage dweller of forests and icy deserts, if not even of ferocious pre-humanity. The atmosphere in which the myth of the Superman has taken shape and developed is not very different. This is due in part to Nietzsche himself. We say in part because the philosophy of Nietzsche is made up of elements which are much more heterogeneous and varied than most people realize. It is, however, undeniable that the evolutionist superstition with its biological appendices has greatly influenced one aspect of Nietzschean thought which is far from peripheral and which is naturally the worst. And it can be said that, until yesterday, what had been most widely understood in Nietzsche is generally this aspect, precisely because it was the one which was most directly connected to ideas prevalent in our time. The Nietzschean theory of the Superman is an appendix of naturalism, and as such is something which belongs by now to the past, and taken as it is, could only succeed in diverting the aspirations of the best of the new generation to the extent that it begins and ends in the religion of life, or better, in the superstition of life. This is how we think we should describe a conception at whose center lies pure vitality, in its simply biological meaning, which natural scientists consider from the outside, with the same methods as those they apply to matter, while voluntarists, intuitionists, and actionists try instead to know it in the form of direct feeling of the immediate data of consciousness. But either way, this principle is purely animal, instinctive, pre-personal life. It is the root and the deep will of that in us which is merely body and nature. Now it seems that the conceptions of which we are speaking cannot see anything else in man, or that, if they do discern something else, they see it only as secondary and derivative with respect to life. The I, for them, is not a supernatural principle, it is not the expression of another reality, but is more or less the feeling of the vital force, a feeling which can be increased or diminished, fortified or exhausted. It is solely from this that the famous Nietzschean concept of the reversal of all values, Unwertung aller Werte, and the consequent theory of power originate and derive their meaning. A whole system of ethical, social, and religious conceptions, according to this theory, conspired for centuries against life, and favoured an ominous misselection by exalting as value and spirit all that mortifies and emasculates instinct, that veils or lowers the feeling of the vital force. These conceptions are the values of decline and resentment, announced by the slaves, the weak, the underprivileged, the outcasts of nature, who through them have overcome the basis on which, in strong and sound times, the Superman and the right of the Superman as master of men depended and have prevailed. Nietzsche proclaims the revolt against these values of decline, unmasks their poisonous nature, and offers as principle of a new judgment the criterion that only what confirms the vital instinct, what justifies the vital instinct, what strengthens the vital instinct, whose maximum expression is for him the will to power, can be said to be true, moral, legitimate, spiritual, and beautiful. That which detracts from life, limits life, condemns life, and chokes off the will to power is false, immoral, bad, and subversive. A new religion of the will to power is proclaimed by Nietzsche as prelude to the advent of a new age of the Superman. It must be recognized that, by will to power, Nietzsche does not mean solely the will to outer dominion, but intends also inner dominion. The Superman is not only the dominator of men, but also the one who knows to render his own instincts, developed up to an elementary frightening vehemence, subject also to his own absolute mastery, and yet not in the sense of choking them off, but rather of holding them almost like wild animals, ready to release whenever he so desires. However, in both cases, that is, as dominator of himself, as also in the domination of the exterior world, in the aspect of Nietzsche's philosophy which we consider here, the whole thing always ends up being reduced to mere feeling. The value of the will to power, arduously developed through the paths of both good and evil, through the most extreme tests, bounded only by the most insane limits, ruthless both towards itself and towards others, this value is always that of an increased and exacerbated feeling of life, of an I which draws its self-consciousness and its self-confirmation from nothing else but this wild feeling of itself. The wave swells but does not find outlet, does not find transfiguration. Exasperation basically runs in neutral. Asceticism is dark, almost diabolical, enjoying itself devoid of superior meaning. One commentator on Nietzsche, George Simmel, has spoken about vicissitudes in which the extreme intensity of life transforms itself and almost changes into a different quality, a more than life. But in the world of Nietzsche and Superman, the premise for this to achieve reality are missing. There is lacking an idea, a point of reference which acts, so to speak, as transformer in the circuit of life, and which actualizes it as light, as supra-life, as revelation and affirmation of everything supernatural. Apollo, that is the Olympian principle, the Olympian superiority interpreted by Nietzsche as a symbol of exteriority and unreality, always remains for him a danger, the enemy of Dionysos, that is, of life, the uncontrollable impulse of life, which gorges itself on itself, says yes to itself, and does not want to be different from what it is, considering every afterlife as an illusion and as an escape for impotent and sick people. The circle remains closed, and we remain convinced that, since he evoked, even though unconsciously and on the speculative plane, an apex of life to whose intensity only a supernatural point of reference could be adequate, and since he did not possess such a point of reference, so that this intensity forced back in itself, so to speak, caused a short circuit, we remain convinced that this situation was what really led Nietzsche to a tragic end, to madness. If man is something that must be overcome, if man is a bridge which leads from the beast to the Superman, this overcoming, this passage, is illusory, unless one works from the premise of the existence of two opposite natures, two opposite worlds, and if one continues instead to consider life, and life alone in its various forms and intensities, as everything. Today, racism seems to build upon the worst aspect of Nietzsche's heritage, in that it tends to reduce every value to our biological basis, to make life, blood, and race the measure and condition of every spiritual form, and thus falls into a distorting reductionism which quite simply closes off the path towards true overcoming and true superhumanity. What we consider to be the basis of value, and what was always traditionally considered to be such, is that life is not spirit and spirit is not life, but that spirit gives shape to life, and that what in life shows a truly superior and dominating character does not originate from life, but is a manifestation through or by means of life, of spirit, that is, of everything supernatural. Once the true center is recognized in these terms, clearly the first precondition for any true overcoming is the gradual shift of one's self-consciousness, one's sense of one's own I, from the pole of life to the pole of spirit. Now, the various voluntarist, actionist, purportedly racist tendencies at work today are striving in precisely the opposite direction by strengthening, using all possible means, the purely physical and vital feeling of the I. They simultaneously strengthen the prison of the latter, and create a hardening, an insolence, an exasperating and materialistic perception of will, individuality, health, and power, all of which represent so many obstructions to inner emancipation, and the circuits then remain closed. The point of reference for the self-transformation of the intensively lived life into more than life is lacking. The Superman does not go beyond the beautiful domineering beast of the demon of Dostoevsky. This is the reduction ad absurdum of Nietzsche. Devoid of outlet, ever-evoked intensity cannot but give rise to a lacerating hypertension internally, to the dumb tragedy which the Titan always bears in himself. The true type of the Superman is rather Olympian, a calm greatness which expresses an irresistible superiority, something which terrifies and at the same time compels veneration, which prevails and disarms without fighting, establishing suddenly the feeling of a transcendent force completely under control, but totally capable of release, the wonderful and frightening sense which antiquity associated with the concept of the newman, supra-life, that is, spirit, totally realized in its supernatural aspect, which permeates and governs absolutely everything which is life, is the substance here. But this type, the true Superman, cannot be treated merely as a construction of the thought of today. There is no great tradition of antiquity, whether of the East or of the West, which did not possess it. The tradition of the divine right, of the legitimate kings, because they were the virile bearers of a force from above, is its last echo. To conceive the sudden re-emergence of this ancient conception, in a world where every great horizon was dead, where to serve as immediate ideological substance for its incarnation, there were only the profane and opaque myths of evolutionism and natural selection, and a confused need for force and liberation, to conceive this is also to understand the invisible genesis of the theory of the Nietzschean Superman, its limit, and the path which can lead beyond it. I will make some commentary now. Evola is referring to the sense of the Roman Senate with its ease and power, its ancient sense of superiority that commands respect. But the problem is, those days are gone. And when a tree has had several bad seasons, its dead wood needs to be cut away, it needs to reform at a lower level, and remember again its strength and its ferocity from the ground, that has to be formed with momentum into a tight force from below, and only then once again can it be remembered the light from above. As we see here, as in every aspect of life, the solar does not exist without the lunar, the heavens not without the earth, neither the man without the woman. They are helpless alone, and to join together is a great work and a difficult work, because it is a real work of real communication between opposites that one day can make the rivers flow again.